Hello, everybody. My name is Sayed Moen, and this is Ron's Gotta Talk for Monday, 20th of December, 2021. Well, this is actually our 100th episode. Yes, 100 episodes of this random podcast about everything from smartphones to gaming to EVs and much more. I honestly didn't think we'd make it this far, in a way. So, yeah, I mean, if you've been listening since the first episode or the previous episode, thank you so much for all the support, and thank you for pretty much listening in a way and supporting this way. Again, it means a little bit, a lot, or it means a lot if you think about it. So yeah, absolutely appreciate the support, and yeah, tell your friends and family on and on about this podcast and get them to listen to it a bit more oftenly than once in a while. But so the tech news / launch cycle tends to slow down around the festive season, but we've got lots of things to talk about in today's episode. For example, new rumors about the S22 series. So, without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? We got to start with the rumor mill surrounding the Samsung Galaxy S22 series. Samsung is going to launch the S22 early next year, in a way. That's expected. And so, if you think about it, to nobody's surprise, we've gotten tons of rumors and leaks around these phones. First up, the S22 Ultra could be getting a new feature utilizing the 108 megapixel sensors. According to a Korean news site, IT Material, that's an actual website, you can look it up if you want to. This feature is called Detail Enhancer. It uses the 108 megapixel main camera to offer improved macro images. Now, they also state that as this requires the 108 megapixel sensor in a way, this could also be available on the S20 Ultra and the S21 Ultra via software update. So that's pretty cool. This isn't really game-changing, but yeah, who knows what could happen. A famous leaker, Ice Universe, tweeted that all the phones in the S22 lineup will have a glass back. Now, if you don't know, the S21 series, the Plus and the Ultra variants, if I believe, rightfully so, both had this kind of, how do you say it? It had a glass back, pretty solid glass back in a way. And the regular S21 had a plastic back. The S21 had a kind of glass thick back, if you know what I'm talking about. Basically, it looks like glass from far away, but when you touch it, it's plastic, actually. It's a plastic kind of frame, it's at the back and all, but it looks like glass, so it's a glastic scent, essentially. The S21 regular had a glass back, in a way, if you think about it, so, again, this could be a welcome move from Samsung, regardless. And then lastly, in this round of S21 rumors and leaks, we've gotten a leak of all the accessories for the S22 series. Box.co.uk has listed over 60 official accessories for these phones, everything from clear covers to smart LED view covers. Again, probably the whole breadth of accessory officially endorsed and officially made accessories for the S22 phones. So, you know, the cases, the screen protectors, the S Pen also, that you can get for the S22 Ultra. So that's pretty cool. It was just listed on the site, and again, who knows, they probably will be available sooner to the launch of these phones. So again, pretty interesting developments nonetheless. Switching camps over to Apple, Bloomberg reporter Mark Gurman claims that Apple could be launching a new external monitor for its Macs, responding to a question regarding the matter. Now, people have thought, okay, you might be saying that Apple could be launching a monitor, but it probably is giving his opinion that Apple should launch one. But regardless, it's interesting to hear from him. He stated that, and I'll quote him here, "I strongly believe Apple will launch a new external monitor for its latest Macs. A lower-cost monitor, I think, would be a hot seller for those looking to add a larger screen to their new MacBook Pro, without spending the equivalent of a luxury car down payment on the Pro Display XDR. At this point, the cost of building that monitor has likely come down, and with a few tweaks and perhaps a slight drop in brightness, Apple might be able to get to a similar quality monitor at a slightly smaller size at perhaps about half the price." By the way, it's still hilarious that Apple tried to justify the current monitor's price by comparing it to a $43,000 Hollywood grade reference monitor. Honestly, he's on to something if you look at it in that point of view. It's high time that Apple does offer a smaller and more affordable monitor that would go well with the MacBook Pro. There's a supply chain crisis that might affect its viability, but I'm pretty sure there's a market for an Apple-made display in a way, if you think about it, that is. So it's an interesting comment from Gurman, and then again, you know, it's high time we do get something that is not the Pro Display XDR, something below it, for regular users and those who want multiple displays, and that one that can work with the Mac flawlessly. Who knows? It could be a wireless display. I think that could be a good product that Apple could release, a wireless AirPlay monitor that easily with a click of a button, you know, mirrors whatever is on the iPad or Mac to another display, and you just need to power it. I think that's something that Apple could do really well if you think about it. Huawei, for context, have created a monitor where on top of the HDMI input, there's also screen mirroring functionality. You just tap a Huawei phone and it would show up straight on a display without any much more effort. I mean, assuming the monitor is on, plugged into the wall, plugged into power, basically. You just tap your phone and it would quickly switch on screen mirroring. So that could also be a good product if Apple is interested. I mean, I'm no wizard, but I honestly think they could make a good monitor regardless. And we've got to keep talking about Apple. According to a publication, Taiwanese Commercial Times, they're claiming that Apple is planning to update its Apple Silicon chips every 18 months. That's roughly a year and a half. Every year and a half, a new chip of Apple Silicon. So we're currently on the M1. We've already gotten the M1 based chips, the M1 Pro and the M1 Max on the MacBook Pros. And we kept thinking, when will the M2 come out? Turns out, according to this publication and this kind of robotic translation here of their information, according to sources in the supply chain industry, Apple Silicon will be updated every 18 months in the future. In the second half of 2022, Apple will first launch the M2 processor, codenamed Staten, like Staten Island, but Staten. And in the first half of 2023, it will launch the new M2X processor architecture, codenamed Rhodes, and release two processors such as the M2 Pro and the M2 Max, according to the different graphics cores. Again, this would drive the newer MacBook Pros later on, like this year's MacBook Pros, the M1 Pro and M1 Max, basically. So it's similar. Continuing on, Apple's M2 series processors all use the 4-nanometer process and will be updated to the M3 series processors after an 18-month cycle. It's expected that they will be mass-produced using TSMC's 3-nanometer process. So this is interesting, what these folks are claiming here. It's all rumors at this point. It's all industry sources telling you that, oh, you know, there will be an M2, but they'll do it every year and a half they'll have a new processor or new generation of Apple Silicon chips. It's interesting what we have here. You know, they are looking to, Apple needs to release new chips, and those to go on to more advanced Macs in a way so that people buy an upgrade, if you think about it. If you keep putting an M1 chip, we've seen what happened to the iMac. A lot of people kind of snubbed the iMac in a way you could think because it had the same chips as the MacBook Air or a Mac Mini. So why would you spend the extra amount of money for a slightly older chip now? But again, I kind of can understand that Apple also needs a bit more time to tweak the processor. It's a desktop chip. You know, it's different from a mobile chip. Mobile chip is quite, you know, quite on the fly. So you kind of make it, it fits, it has a longer support base. And if you think about it, Apple's been making A-series chips for a very long time. So they've nailed the science of making those chips. And I think for the M-series chips, they're probably going to take their time. And I think there's nothing much to elaborate here, really. It's probably good for Apple. I mean, they can kind of calm down and take their time and really kind of refine and meticulate and really create something high performance, quite also pro year after year, so that's pretty interesting, nonetheless. So moving over to Realme, probably a brand that dares to leap over and over, as obvious on their brand, as obvious as their slogan is. They've been teasing the GT2 Pro, or I mispronounced it, the GT2 Pro, and obviously we know a couple of things. It's going to have great cameras, it's going to have the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1, it's going to probably have a massive battery normally, and good fast charging. We don't know everything, but what we do know is that they're claiming they're going to bring some, they're going to bring three world-first innovations, essentially, that have never been seen on a phone, in a way. So they claim that their phones, the phone's design will be sustainable. It's going to have a pretty big ultra-wide angle camera, in a way. Again, they claim it's around design, cameras, and communication. And then today they decided to go a bit further in detail about these innovations that they're bringing forward. Again, kind of to show off what they've been working on. And again, to talk it up further in detail before the actual event. The actual event will kind of be about the cameras, the processor, the price, specs, everything, you know. The main event will essentially be the final price, final specs, this and that. Oh, the camera looks great. You definitely need to, it's 100 megapixels, you know how it is. So the three things they brought forward were about the design, the cameras, or photography, as they'll call it, or communication. Design-wise, to start with, they're working with Naoto Fukasawa, who's worked on the GT Master. And again, his design is kind of shining through the phone. Again, looks pretty cool, in a way. And they're working with him again on the GT2 Pro, focusing on sustainability. And again, inspired pretty much by paper. So, again, apparently, and this is their pronunciation, it's very funny. Okay, it's calling it Paper Tech Master Design. I'm sorry. Is this a phone or it's some piece of art? I'm sorry. Is this supposed to go to the Louvre for you know, tackle the climate crisis, or this is a phone that people actually buy that's like around $600, $700? What kind of name? Again, for lack of a better name, they probably came up with Paper Tech Master Design. Apparently, it's supposed to, we can already guess how it will feel. The back cover apparently is made from a biopolymer material that is from SABIC. That's a familiar company. Apparently this is a eco-friendly alternative to fossil fuel materials, mainly plastic, actual plastic, okay? regular plastic that consumes more carbon, right? You know, more carbon dioxide. You know how it goes, guys. So they're now obviously going to use biopolymer, which apparently is going to be more sustainable. And again, apparently the design will essentially be a bit like it'll be inspired by paper. So I can already sense the texture of the back of this phone. It'll be a rough back, but again, it'll be quite sustainable as it's going here. And apparently, along with that, they're going with eco-friendly packaging this time. They're not going to throw the charger out of the box to save the environment. They're making the packaging more environmentally friendly. Apparently, they're taking the overall plastic ratio from 21.7%. That's probably all the packaging or the kind of seal around the phone box. That it probably is 21.7%. Down to, and get this, 0.3%. So that's pretty interesting. Again, we don't know how this will play out. The launch event, they'll probably talk about this for a hot second. So we're gonna definitely, we'll see how that progresses. And then along with design, they're claiming another world first with communication. It'll have, apparently, they're coding this here, ultra wide band, hyper smart antenna switching. I did not make that up. That's the name they actually have. They're given for their antenna design for this phone. So this super duper long name, ultra wide angle, ultra wide band, hyper smart antenna switching, is apparently a their arrangement for this phone, where they'll be 12 wraparound antennas around all sides of the phone. And again, it supports all the mainstream bands in a way, in all directions. And apparently, it checks the signal strength of all the antennas around it. And again, it determines the best signal possible. So basically, if you ever had an issue of signal dropouts or your Wi-Fi dropping out or anything like that, you won't have an issue with this phone. So again, if you, for comparison, on a rivaling Android phone, if you're probably ever struggling to stay connected to a 4G network, there was not enough bands, this one will literally keep you well connected to a 4G network. It'll give you probably more than 2 bars. We don't know. Again, I think at the actual launch event, we'll probably talk a bit more about this, but I can see where they're coming with this. They're coming from with this hyper-smart antenna switching design that they're coming up with. It's for 5G. 5G is not that powerful. You're in front of a cell. It would give you 5G speeds. You move over. You face a tree. You get 4G speeds. So I could see where they're coming from, but I'm probably have a concern with radiation. What will be the radiation, if that's even a word? What will be the radiation coming from this phone? What's the reading? I think, again, once we see proper reviews of this phone and analysis, especially testing the radiation that comes out of it, it's there's a specific figure. I don't remember the word for it, but if it's not that radiating, that would be interesting nonetheless. And then apparently also they have things like Wi-Fi enhancer and 360 degree NFC, which apparently, and that one's interesting, apparently it would increase the sensing area by 500%, and the sensing distance by 20%. So it's not really a big deal, but again it could improve connectivity on this phone, and this is being Realme's best of the best of their lineup. So again, it would probably matter a lot for them that being a phone, you should be able to call, you should be able to send data and receive data. So if you haven't figured that out, then everything else is pretty useless. The cameras are useless, the battery is useless, the screen is useless. If you can't connect to the internet and or place calls and do phone stuff. So it's pretty interesting. Again, I can't verify or believe in this whole super signal thing as they're claiming it to be, that it'll be smarter with the signal stability and all. But it's pretty interesting nonetheless. And then finally, amongst the three innovations you could say that they're bringing to this phone is in terms of photography. They claim that they're bringing the world's first 150-degree ultra-wide-angle camera. Now, it's not really a world first, and 150 degrees is pretty unusual angle. Apparently, it's just 278% higher field of view than the primary unit's 89-degree field of view. So you got a much wider perspective, and apparently they've created a fisheye mode that'll essentially give you that ultra-long depth of field effect, which is interesting. I'm sure it's kind of a fad. The photography part is probably a fad. How much of a benefit will a 150-degree field of view ultra-wide-angle camera bring? Ultra-wide-angle sensors are useful itself as it is without the fisheye and all that kind of nonsense. It's useful to give you a broader perspective when you do videos, when you're recording videos, and you gotta get a broader, wider perspective generally from a normal, instead of a normal lens. You want to switch to a wider perspective. You want to pull in more in the frame. So ultra-wide-angle sensors are already useful. This is just like a nice little party trick, you could say. The fisheye lens is a party trick, if you think about it, you know. I mean, but if they could do it through software, good for them. I'm sure there's an app on the Google Play Store that'll let you create a fisheye photo from an ultra-wide-angle sensor's photo. So they're probably baking in software. Again, this is Realme doing some software wizardry here with the cameras, aside from having a 150-degree field of view camera, which is pretty cool. So this phone's interesting. Obviously, they didn't talk about the final specs, the final price, the other cool features potentially, the cameras. We've got to wait hopefully a couple of more days till the actual event to find out. But again, this is the best of the best. So this being their flagship, top of the line phone, they're bringing a lot to the table here. And that's pretty interesting, being a GT phone nonetheless. So again, they're really daring to leap forward regardless. And you already talk about smartphones, lots of smartphones generally. We got to talk about Redmi, Realme's competitor. We're also switching camps here. Redmi, the Note 11 series is already available in China. Pretty good phones. They have the Dimensity. They got a MediaTek chip. I think it was the Dimensity something. I'll have to check. Give me a hot second. Okay, I'll kind of stand to be... I've checked. It's a Dimensity chip on some of the variants. So that's interesting. In India, we talked about it on previous episodes, kind of. In India, the Note 11T is the Chinese Note 11 5G variant, so they're calling it the 11T already. So that's pretty interesting. And now, the global variant has been certified by a whole range of authorities. So Russia's EEC, Singaporean IMDA, we have certified the global variant of the Redmi Note 11. So this is coming very, very soon. This is actually the 4G variant, the 4G-only variant. Obviously, if this is certified for the Singaporean market, surely this will come to other Asian markets, because it's usually the same product or the same... If you know what I'm talking about, it's the same sorts of specs, right? It's very similar. There's no massive difference between the rest of Asia and Singapore, in a way. This is a 4G-only variant. It will come with a Snapdragon chip, according to my smart price, per their claims. So it could be the case. Who knows? We don't know much other than the fact that there's been a certification. So it's pretty... So it is coming. And it probably will cost around $200 to $250 potentially. So that's pretty cool, if you ask me. So it's pretty cool development. Again, we don't know much about the global variant, generally speaking, but then again, it's quite like the previous. It'll probably have mid-range Snapdragon chips. It'll have some impressive specs that probably you'd pay almost double the price or triple the price for, to get those functions. So again, they'll also be, hopefully they'll be good value for money in a way. We're several months away from the Note 11 global launch. So again, it'll be interesting to see what they bring to the table, regardless. And if I already talk about Xiaomi, we gotta bring up a product that has sort of been discovered, you could say. They've not announced or launched or said anything, but it's kind of here. And if you really wanted a streaming stick and one that ran Android TV, there's Google Chromecast with Google TV. Pretty good streaming stick, from my own opinion, as like a someone who likes to watch TV sorts of. It's a good product Google made. You can't go wrong with it, right? But it's obviously $50, and well, it's not available everywhere. And again, it's not really the best Android TV streaming stick in a way. And then obviously Xiaomi brought its own answer to the Chromecast with the Mi TV and the Fire TV stick. Gotta acknowledge the Fire stick. You can't... That is also good, but the problem with the Fire stick is you gotta be well antiquated, or you gotta be well sucked into Amazon's ecosystem. Prime Music, Prime Video, Prime this, Prime that. Amazon Prime, kind of. You're probably buying from Amazon. Twitch Prime, Prime Video. You get what I'm talking about. You gotta have Prime so that you take full advantage of the Fire TV stick. And if you don't have that, well, you know, it's blank. You could do things on it. You can sideload, you can run Netflix, you can run YouTube, you can run a web browser, you could run Kodi, you could, you know, illegally pirate and stream stuff if you want to. We do not condone and endorse. We don't condone and endorse these activities. We don't encourage piracy, but you can definitely, you can do that if you have a Fire Stick. There are certainly a billion tutorials. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. Again, use legal services, okay? But yeah, if you think about it, in the streaming box or stick market, there are not many options out there. Xiaomi brought their answer to the Fire Stick and Chromecast with the Mi TV stick, regular Mi TV stick that came out ages ago. It was a hit. Some people loved it. Some people really hated it. I watched the reviews. Unlike say the latest iPhone or something. I don't know. I can't watch through a whole bunch of reviews of this because maybe it's something I probably might need, you know. Long story short, I actually have a 43-inch TV in the living room in my home. And we're just using the built-in apps like YouTube. And, well, I've watched Netflix, but I've not really used it on the TV, sort of. But yeah, it is really slow for those tasks, like streaming YouTube. It takes ages to load videos. It gets stuck. It's frozen. So, honestly, on top of probably a new phone and a MacBook or something, a Mi TV stick would be great to have. But I've also heard reviews that it is slow in some places. Playback and rendering is pretty bad in certain formats and all. If you're trying to stream 4K Kodi, don't do it. It'll crash and burn, sort of. And that it may not really support everything, whatever you throw at it. So that's what I've kind of been hearing, reading up reviews, watching videos, that it's good to just stream YouTube and Netflix at full HD, but not good for 4K. So Xiaomi's creating a new version of this, the Mi TV, the Xiaomi TV Stick 4K. Not the Mi TV Stick, the Xiaomi TV Stick 4K. Like everything for Xiaomi, the guy mentioned Xiaomi because, you know, it's now that's the brand name everyone recognizes. So Xiaomi TV Stick 4K. Now, they didn't announce it. There's no launch event or announcement or press release. This was just a listing on their website. And again, big shout out to Android TV Guide for referencing it. They found out about this product. So it comes with Google. Again, there's no mention of Google TV functionality. It will be supported if it has Android 11 here. So so it runs at 4K resolution, supports Dolby Atmos. It could do regular HDR if you think about it. It's pretty good. Again, it's the closest competitor to the Chromecast in a way. It's neck and neck with the Chromecast. And again, then again, if you think about the Android TV space, there are very few streaming sticks that can take on the Google Chromecast in a way. And then you look outside, there's the Roku, there's the Apple TV, there's the Fire TV, Amazon, Apple, Roku, they're great. Roku is probably the best of the three, being it's neutral from the big streaming or ecosystem players. It's not sucked in. They've got their own free streaming channel outside of it. They don't have anything really to suck you into the ecosystem. The streaming stick you have is the ecosystem that they have. Oh well. But it's a pretty interesting product. Again, unlike the regular Mi TV stick, this one streams in 4K HDR, which I think is very important for a lot of people. Now, we don't know much about where it's available, where you can buy it, how much it costs. It's just been listed. So it might be available early next year. Who knows? They probably have already listed it because they're going to launch it down the road. So it might be available early next year. So I actually cannot wait for this. It would be a viably good upgrade from my current smart TV in a way. The Chromecast is available with Google TV, but it's hard to get, and it's pretty expensive here in Bahrain, as far as my knowledge goes. It's about, the Mi TV stick regular 1080p is like 15 to 20 dinars, and the Chromecast is about 25 to 30-ish. Like, it's basically about 1.5 times more than the Mi option. So again, I think Xiaomi could again sell this at like a pretty competitive price, and again, cannot wait for them to release it probably early next year. Probably they're not going to release it now, but they'll probably do it early next year. Oh, and in case you're curious, there is support for Netflix and Prime Video. That's definitely something to note, because if you buy a lot of Android boxes, you know, that have Android, regular or the Android TV version, that have issues with supporting Netflix and Prime Video. Again, if you look up the reviews and videos, I've seen it. You know, they have an issue where the app is not available. If you do load it, if you can sideload it, it would only stream at standard definition, not at HD resolution because of DRM issues, weirdly. So this has support for Prime Video and Netflix, if you're into that kind of stuff, that is. We don't know much about it, and we don't know where it's available, how much it costs, but again, can't wait for this to come out very soon. Definitely something I'd actually want to get down the road. And finally, this is interesting. I don't know, have you guys played Halo Infinite? I mean, I've heard a lot about it. It's good. It's interesting. It's, you know, not 10 out of 10 from IGN, I promise. Let me see, what's the score for this game from IGN? I'm curious. Halo Infinite IGN review. Give me a second here. Let me pull it up on Google. 9 out of 10. You know it's good when IGN says 9 out of 10. Okay, it's all right. And let them review games nicely. I mean, if it's 9 out of 10 for them, they probably enjoyed it. It's okay. Guys, you know, life is short. Enjoy the games you have. A lot of work goes into it. You know, the devs put so much effort. They lose their sleep. They work overtime, you know, to make these games. And obviously, if there are day one glitches, then, well, be mad at them. Or, I don't know, in-game transactions, then be mad. But honestly, if the games are really, really good and you're still annoyed, then, I don't know, something's wrong with you. Oh, well. A lot has been said about Halo Infinite. It's a pretty good game. There's already esports tournament already that's kicked off for the game. Halo Championship Series kickoff, Major Riley 2021. Now, why am I talking about an esports tournament? I mean, it's too much to cover for myself, right? Well, you'd be surprised that esports tournament has something to do with the supply chain crisis, right? And interestingly enough, a lot of the players in this esports tournament for the Halo game are running, well, there'll be a chunk of players running on proper Xbox Series X consoles, and then there's like a chunk of apparently open bracket players that'll be playing on dev kits. That's how bad it's gotten, guys. Guys, you want to see, you guys think of this context. Now, this is no third party organization, there's no MLG doing it. This is Microsoft. The folks running Halo, sort of, 343 Industries, they're doing this tournament. The official developers and platform holders, they're running this tournament. They've had to get dev kits, Xbox dev kits for the Series X, for the players, obviously modified running regular retail software to run Halo Infinite to compete in this tournament. That's how bad it's gotten, guys. We don't have many Xboxes on Earth, so they had to take dev kits. That's how bad it's gotten. I really hope the supply chain crisis is over. Does get solved. It needs intervention. This is getting ridiculous. This is getting out of hand. I was seeing another article the other day that one of Apple's executives followed an account that scrapes the internet for any availability of Xbox or PlayStation consoles. That's how ridiculous it's getting. I mean, I'll read the tweet that was sent, that was given, that was tweeted out, or the tweet that was sort of given, that was sent by the main head of the esports division at 343 Industries, that the Halo developer, Tahir Hassanjik. He said, and I'll quote him here: "Heads up, open bracket players, you'll be playing this weekend on Series X development consoles. They're functional identical. They're functionally identical and will be operating in retail mode, so it's the exact same experience. They just look a little different." Why? Global supply chain shortage is real. It's ridiculous. This is, I mean, I didn't make this up. He said this here. It's real. You know, it's not bad, okay? Dev kits are not like another machine. They're not computers. They are highly modified versions of a games console, but they're designed for developers so that they could run in and design their games on for those consoles and sort of create ports easily. That's not a problem. It's interesting. But again, I can't believe it that again, things have gotten ridiculous to the point that we have to, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, well, what can I say? We can't make enough Xboxes that they keep, some of them can be used for an esports tournament. It's well, they had to make the most of the circumstances, right? You know, I mean, again, I still can't imagine the heartbreak of both Xbox and PlayStation gamers who have yet to get their latest, greatest consoles. The Series S is available a little bit now. Now the availability for that is coming in clear, so you could walk into a store and buy it at a regular price. I can say that for, in Bahrain, kind of, the Series S has gone down in price a bit, so it's around what it starts at, 125-ish dinars for the Series S. It's still a little bit more than that, usually. If you're a PC gamer, you have no problems running Halo Infinite. I'm sure the specs are probably low, right? But then again, I think it's been hard. I think this is one of the hard-hit parts of the pandemic has been that we've had to wait forever for these next-gen consoles. It seems like we've waited for years for these to come, and we've even delayed purchasing games or probably entire another consoles for it to, for this to come out. Then it being sold out, it's it, again, it's just ridiculous. You know, then again, we can't make enough graphics cards. We can't make enough GPUs and system on chips to meet the current supply and demand. I think everyone's gone online, so, you know. But I honestly think there must be a solution to this. Again, it's very ridiculous to think that that we have to run out of Xboxes so much so that people have to follow accounts or folks who can find them online for availability, then they can, you know, run in and get that stock that is there only. And esports tournaments to be needing to use dev kits, which is just ridiculous. I mean, I really do hope this supply chain crisis is over. I really want an Xbox Series X now that I think about it. But now that really has pushed me to think of getting a PC one day, because it seems like consoles will never come at my doorstep at all. I kind of won't be able to afford one. It's just ridiculous, nonetheless. But yeah, the world can be a really insane place, but we've just reached the end of our episode. What do you think of everything you heard today? Let me know. I'm on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok at Sayed_99. Follow me there if you can. Subscribe to the show wherever you're listening right now. At least we're not out of stock, and there's no shortage of servers supplying the show. There's no shortage of apps offering this podcast. It's an RSS feed. So whatever app or service or podcast provider skims RSS feeds from a major folk or somewhere, or again picks this up by accident, you can subscribe to the show from there. So no shortage of that. Don't forget to share this to your friends and family. Totally free. And again, there's no shortage of episodes here. We've done 100 of these episodes already, so you can go back and listen to all of them on repeat, sort of, or you can queue the next previous episode up after this if you want to. But yeah, till Wednesday, this is about my own signing out. Stay safe, take care. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, whatever you're listening to, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever you're up to, really. Yeah. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day. All right. Ciao.